Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 473. And I'm joined this week by Charlie Cooper. I'm a big fan of Charlie. I've told it numerous times. I got into this country really early. I talk about it in this episode. In fact, I talk about it in the bonus episode next, like this coming Friday as well, but in slightly different ways, I promise you. Charlie is fantastic. I've not heard that many podcasts with Charlie, so I was really excited to get him on and have a good old chat, and it flew by. He's in a new film called See How They Run, and it's with Sam Rockwell and Saoirse Ronan and Adrian Brody and Ruth Wilson and Tim Key and just an endless list of amazing and astounding actors. So it's a murder mystery. I was excited to talk to him about it. I'm talking to Tom George, who's the director, on Friday. He was the director of This Country as well. So it's an amazing journey that these two have gone on. And I wanted to talk to them both. So I'm going to get into it. I'm brought to you as ever by SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com, Patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, and Twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipYo. You go to any of them places and you'll get some kind of different, unique engagement with me and ways to support the podcast. So check them all out. I also want to tell you to check out Tell Me About It. We've just finished series one. It's my new podcast. The first episode is about school days, actually. So considering the kind of nature of this country, there's a lot of tales from my little area of the world in there. So yeah, check that out. If this is your first time tuning in, I've had loads of amazing, let's go with comedy actors, as Charlie is a comedy actor and writer. I've had Tim Key, I've had Adam Buxton, I've had Jamie Demetriou, I've had Ashlyn B, Sarah Pascoe, Catherine Ryan, just loads of amazing people. So sink your teeth into the back catalogue. Lou Sanders, Brett Goldstein, I mean, come on. David Earl twice, Joe Wilkinson, loads of great people to dig your teeth into. But for now, dig your teeth into this. That sounded more kind of aggressive and suggestive than I intended. But this is episode 473 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Charlie Cooper. Right, I'm here with Charlie Cooper. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you. I've been a big fan for a long while, and
it's an exciting one.
Obviously, we're here today primarily to talk about See How They Run, but we've got enough time to talk about loads of stuff for that. So that's brilliant. Exciting. But how are you finding doing press for See How They Run? Because it's a murder mystery, and the mystery is a key part of that. So it's kind of hard to talk about, right? I'm planning my questions about it. I'm like, there's loads I don't want to say.
You know what? It's been proper stressing me out all morning. I mean, this is the beginning of my press day, so I don't quite know how problematic it's going to be, but there's nothing I can say. It's a murder mystery set in the 1950s. Someone gets killed, maybe a couple of people get killed, and someone's a murderer. And you will find out who it is. Job done. Next.
You'll definitely find out by the end. It's kind of key to it. You're speaking of nerves or stress on the morning of this press. How was it going into a film like that? Because it's stacked with stars. Sam Rockwell, Adrian Brody, Saoirse Ronan. I think all of them have got Oscars. Ruth Wilson. And just the most amazing cast of British legends and American legends and everything. So
completely.
How was that to jump in on?
Terrifying. Well, I only got the part because the director is Tom George, who did This Country.
Yeah.
And he rang me up saying, look, I've been asked to do this film, this massive film, but I'm terrified. Will you be in it so I've got a mate on set? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Where do I sign? So, that, I mean, it made me feel better knowing that he's there.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of like a sort of one of those like anxiety reducing animals that you can just sort of take around with you. But when I found, when he said, I was like, oh, who's in it? And he said, Saoirse Ronan and Sam Rockwell are the leads. I was like, wow. And then it was nice because I, you know, I'm good friends with Tom. So I sort of was in throughout the process, sort of hearing what was going on, who they were casting at different times. And when he called me up saying, yeah, we've got Adrian Brody and you're going to have a scene with him, I was like, are you mad? The Adrian Brody? And then actually doing it, you know, turning up and, you know, having, I did some rehearsals with Adrian, and just because I'm such a fan of his, and The Pianist is probably one of my favorite films ever. And just, it was one of those moments where he was looking directly into my eyes, and I just, my soul was just like totally enriched. Do you know what I mean? It was just the most surreal, bizarre thing, because I'm always starstruck, and it just feels, I still feel like I don't deserve to be here, which sounds like really ungrateful and stuff, but you know, massive imposter syndrome. But it just felt like I'd sort of won a competition or something.
It's one of the things I spoke to Tom about this as well. It's one of the things I think excited me the most about the film, and I don't know if it was a comfort blanket for Tom or not, but the fact that he's got these guys, but then he's got you, he's got Tim Key, he's got Paul Chahidi, and all these great, my favourites from the British comedy scene, and that kind of thing, and putting them all in a room together again, just Sam Rockwell and Tim Key being in scenes together. Just, I never thought, I didn't know I wanted that, but I needed it. So,
do you know what? It was like assembling a fantasy football team.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, where you've got like, you got 10 million to spend on like a really good striker. So that would be Sam Rockwell. Then you've got like a, you know, this reserve goalkeeper at Bournemouth, which would be me, which would be like half a mil.
And so I completely see that. You've spent all your money and you're going, well, he used to play for my team, so I know he's, but I'll go for that just out of familiarity.
Completely. Oh, my God. So it must have been fun for him. But yeah, like you said, having those names in one room was just, it's like one of those, NBA, like all-stars. It was brilliant. Yeah. And seeing how they work as well. When we did a full day of rehearsals, and Reese Shearsmith, who is just, I idolize, everything he's done has been superb, but seeing how he worked in the room and his like comedy mind, because I think there was a couple of things in the script that needed ironing out, sort of like problem solving, and just watching him literally reading it and thinking and just having an idea straight away that was just like solved everything was just so incredible. So again, I mean, you're just always learning from these people, and that's what's so nice.
It's the most astounding thing, isn't it? I've had that on a few sets where you're like, I know this person is an amazing actor, but what I didn't realise is the mind that's kind of behind that. When they have those moments that are like, well, maybe we do it this way and do that. And you're like, that's genius. It's literally, you've improved it tenfold in a little, well, maybe we do this. And
they make it look so easy. And that's just what's so sort of sickening, because it takes me ages to have a good idea.
I've had ones where I've read a script and it's been like the best script I've ever read. And then I've been on set and one of these amazing iconic actors has said kind of, here's why this scene doesn't quite work. And I'm sitting again, I read this and was like, this is one of the best scenes I've ever read. And he's like, it doesn't work because of this. And if we tweak it this way, small changes, it works now. It's like, fuck.
Just
I was coming in going, I can't believe I'm getting to do this script or this dialogue or whatever else. And they're on that next level of perception, right?
Completely. Because so much of it, I mean, script writing in general is just problem solving.
Yeah.
And it's like being able to work back and having that sort of lucid mind. And it's really, you're sort of either born with it or you're not. I mean, you can get better, but just incredible to watch that. So it's so privileged, I think.
And what's been your approach on writing? Because obviously when you and Daisy were coming up with this country, it's the two of you. It's you and your sister. You can go back and forth. You can do all these things. And this country is one of the prime examples, I think, of something that we're seeing a lot more of now, of people who are kind of naturals, but then there's also going to be that fear of, oh, is this all you can write though?
Yeah,
I mean, you've got your one thing, you've nailed it, but it's so unique to you two. Can you do more? Was there kind of any, right, I've written a BAFTA award winning show. Now I need to learn how to write.
Which completely.
Is this, again, it's so backwards.
No, it is. And that's what we're sort of going through at the moment. It's like we feel like complete novices and that we're starting again, because this country was just what we knew. It was so much of ourselves in those characters. I mean, even acting it is sort of like, Curtin is just me after a few pints, genuinely. So it's that classic thing of write what you know. And all the characters were people we knew and that we went to school with, and, you know, half our bloody families in it. So it was always going to be, we always knew that the next thing we did was going to be the challenge. This will be the easiest thing we ever write. That's what I think we kept sort of telling ourselves, and the easiest thing we ever film. So we're finding out. I mean, we've had ideas for stuff that haven't quite stuck, and we were actually writing separately. I've got a project, and Daisy's got a project that's coming out next month, actually, which is amazing, that she's done with a friend from drama school. Yeah, so she's nailed that next thing perfectly. And I'm sure we'll come back together on a project. But again, it's just finding that idea, because you can, although it can take, 5 seconds to come up with a good idea, it can take, 15, 20 years to have it. Do you know what I mean? The good ideas are the stuff you always end up coming back to, that are sort of milling around in your back of your head. But I think for me particularly, I always feel like I have to take my time. I have to think something over. So yeah, it feels like it's been a long time since the last series of this country, and it probably has, but didn't really feel that sort of the need to rush into anything. So I just waiting for that inspiration, I suppose, is always a tricky thing.
It's the balance, isn't it, of inspiration and of natural ability. And because I have that all the time, I'm like, I'm not inspired to write at the moment or whatever. And then every now and then I'll be like, am I being lazy? Should I be just forcing myself to do this or do that? And it really works that way. But again, it's that imposter syndrome, as you've touched upon. There's always that, hang on, am I using my artistry as an excuse to not get anything done? Well, I'm not inspired.
I think anyone creative is just totally, unless you're a psychopath, you're riddled with self-doubt and anxieties. And especially as a writer, where if you're doing it on your own, it was fine, with Daisy, there's a partnership, and if you're feeling doubtful about something, you've got someone to pull you up again or to bounce ideas off. But when you're on your own and you don't quite know what you're doing, that's really, really hard. And having that discipline is tough. And like you said, it's that thing of, am I being lazy? I mean, everyone works differently. Some people just have to lock themselves in a room 9 to 5 and wait till it comes. I can't quite do that. I have to wait to be excited by something, to be inspired. Yeah. But if the idea you've got excites you, then, it should be a little bit more straightforward. But there's no formula, is there? It's just like whatever works for you, but it's a total minefield.
Well, speaking of that imposter syndrome, you've spoken before, you and Daisy have spoken before about how this country, it took a while and it went to ITV and it wasn't quite what it was meant to be. And then it found its home on the BBC. But along that journey, was there ever fear that it's not going to happen and you're going to get stuck in the real world? You had a lot of different jobs along the way, from modelling to, numerous different things. How were those times when you're kind of having to convince yourself, no, it's going to happen, but it might not feel like it's going to happen?
Oh, completely. That's the thing, that perseverance is so key, because I think there's so many talented people out there that just, fall to the side because it is tough. And it's just, if you haven't got that financial backing or that security, how can you do something creative when you've had no experience? So it's really, if I ever give advice to people, it's just perseverance, just keep going. There were so many times and we felt like this is just too much for us. Because this country was our first project. And of course, we hadn't written anything before. So you have to learn how to write, basically. And that's not easy. That can take years. You have to really, it's the trade like anything else. You have to perfect. And we really went around the houses and we ended up doing a pilot of ITV that was really bad. And we made loads of mistakes, but we had to make those mistakes. Yeah. We had to have those bad times for it to get good, basically. But we didn't really have a plan B. We were both living at home with parents. I think sometimes when you have a plan B, it's quite easy to fall back on that. It was sort of death or glory. So luckily, we're still alive to tell the story. But there were a couple of times where you think, God, is this worth it?
I completely
But like I said
understand.
Before, it's the fact that there was two of us really helped. And the fact we're brother and sister meant that we were so invested in each other already. and there's that sort of chemistry in that relationship that, you know, you can have with friends, but it's not the same. But thank God we did. I mean, yeah, when we found out the pilot wasn't going to series, that was, I think that was the lowest point. And then we got dropped by the production company and we were with agents that we didn't get on with. And that was all sort of its own thing. And it was like, I think I was prepared to walk away from it, but I think it was Daisy. It was like, no, we just got to keep going because this side, we just knew it had to get made, whatever. I mean, there was one point where she was like, why don't we just get Ricky Gervais's email and get him to give us £1 million to make our own. It's like, that's not going to happen. But whether it was just going to be making on YouTube or, you know, on our camera phones, we would have done that if it wasn't picked up by the BBC. And then we were sort of, had a lucky break, really. It was a classic case of right place, right time. And we knew Shane Allen, who was comedy commissioner at the BBC, had seen our stuff, like little videos that we'd done, silly little videos, and liked it. So we managed to get his email and emailed him and said, look, you know, telling our story and what's happened, we've made mistakes. And I think Daisy said something like, look, I'll stand outside your office every day in the karate outfit until you agree to let us come in for a meeting. And he emailed back saying, well, don't do that. That's just weird. Just come in for a meeting. And we did. And he was so sweet. And he just commissioned a series straight away. And he was like, which was incredible. It was quite old school, the way he works, and which is quite rare now. But I think it was a time when BBC Three was going online. So there wasn't like you had to wait for scheduling, or it just freed up money and opportunities. And then, commissioned a series, and we sort of got left alone, which was the best thing because it meant that we could do something that was our own thing. It didn't get muddied by anyone else or ripped apart.
I mean, you spoke about kind of learning as you go on the writing front. Linking up with Tom George feels like it was a really good thing for you two guys as well, because again, it's that weird thing of your brother and sister, so you're like, this is good, isn't it? Like we know this is good, but then there are going to be the moments you're like, is this only good to us? Is this really, really niche? Like literally not just our area, but our family. Is this only our family who'll get this? And Tom felt like, I spoke to Tom about it and he was saying it just felt he got it and clicked and just could come on and be part of that kind of process as you brought that first series to life.
Oh, he was amazing. I mean, he sort of, because when we knew it was going to be a mockumentary, we sort of, I think the producer, Simon Mayhew Archer, said about getting a director in who had done documentaries. And Tom was only meant to come in to help us sort of structure an episode and see, okay, what would a documentary team do? You know, how many talking heads would there be in an episode? You know, how do they structure an episode? Stuff like that. And we had a meeting and we ended up getting on so well that he never really left. He sort of stayed hanging around. So we were like, well, we might as well give it to him then. Yeah. But it was a classic thing of, I think with the ITV thing, it was a complete opposite in terms of like, we were with a production company who were like, right, you need names in this. You need actors, experienced actors, comedy actors, household names. You need a director who's experienced, who's done loads of stuff. And then we ended up doing that. And it was awful. It was just it couldn't have been worse. And then with this country, we sort of threw all that out, started again. And it was sort of the complete opposite. It was sort of that more like DIY, you know, none of us had really done much before. Simon, the producer, had done he'd done various series, he'd done Josh, so he was probably the most experienced of us all. And that sort of really worked, that sort of inexperience. And because we were raw, but we were finding it out for ourselves as we went along. And that was so nice, discovering it, you know, what the show should be. And we did a couple of days where we just took a camera into a park and just were experimenting with stuff. And those were the best moments, I think, really discovering it as a team, as a collaborative thing. Because it was great, you know, there's only so much me and Daisy can do in a room when you're writers, but having someone who can pick up that vision, what you have in your head, and execute it like Tom did was just so liberating and so special.
Yeah. And again, I think that going for not big name actors and the genuine documentary style was what made it work so well. I flicked over and stumbled upon the first episode when it was on, and me and my brother were sat there like, is this real? It was you chatting, and we honestly didn't know if Curtin was a real character or a comedy character. And again, soon enough it became clearer, but it was a genuine, I'd left the room, and he was kind of like, as I came back in, he was like, you've got to look at this. I don't know what we're watching, but that wouldn't have been the case if it had these big name actors in or looked more sitcom-y.
Exactly.
Polished, which I'd imagine the ITV one may have. So
yeah.
I think that was key. And again, what a great way for the two of you to learn as well as your first thing, to have that more free-form approach where, as you say, you're going over park with a camera and playing about and seeing what works. That's amazing as a classroom as such.
It was brilliant. And because it's like, I mean, that was the thing that really appealed to us is, I mean, it wasn't about fooling people, but it was about making something that felt really real. And I think that even came before the comedy, because the comedy comes with the fact that people think it's real because they recognize the characters and identify with it. And I always find my favorite comedies are the ones that you believe in the most. And, you know, these are characters that you went to school with or live next door or, you know, that you see in the supermarket. And that is really special to us. And yeah, so it was just a way of like, how can we make this? Because obviously, I mean, there had been mockumentaries before, and it's that classic thing of, oh, you shouldn't do a mockumentary because it's been done. But in comedy, everything's been done. That's just what comedy is. It's just people retelling jokes, but changing the odd word. You know, everyone steals everything, so that's fine. But it was like, how can we make it slightly different though? And I think that was so much came from Tom, and you know, the way the cameras are, you know, so much of the lines are people delivering them off screen, or you know, and that can be the funniest line, but or you know, just the fact there was two cameras rolling the whole time and there was lots of improv, and that's when it changed, when it didn't feel like work and it felt like you were just having a laugh with your mates. That's when you create the best stuff, I think, because then that's when you're most relaxed and you're most free.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think just touching there upon the familiarity of characters and being like, you've all known someone like that and things like that, it's one of the reasons I think it's so important that we continue to push more and more working class voices in writing and all these kinds of things. Because I spoke to Tom Davis about this, and so many people think that realistic characters have to be quite played down and low-key and whatever else. This country is full of absolutely bonkers characters.
Exactly.
I guarantee you knew people like that. And like a few of the characters Tom Davis has played, he's been like, I've gone into the room with this and everyone's thought it's far too over the top. But it's like, no, I've known blokes like that in pubs in South London and things like that. It doesn't have to be this low-key thing. And this country is, full of that. Every character, if that was being written by... It couldn't have been written by people other than people who've lived around those people and those, those people, you know?
And it's about, like you said, that they can be big characters, but as long as they've got depth and as long as they've got a vulnerability, then that's fine. You believe in them more and they could become way more real. If they're just 2D in your face, and that's when I think you lose an audience.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of becomes like sketch show comedy. And that's the thing, you know, we found with this country. It's like Curtin and Kerry, I mean, on the face of it can be, you know, seem really unlikable and bratish and destructive, but that just doesn't take long for you to see there's complete vulnerability there.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of like lost souls. And that's just so sweet. And I think the thing that really changed it was when we found the character of the vicar, because then that was sort of a character that saw the goodness in them.
Yeah.
It was sort of on the side of the audience, I suppose. And he wouldn't, you know, isn't he, not that he preaches his religion or anything like that. It was just, he just wants to know they're all right and that they're infused. And that was really sweet, I think, finding that relationship, having someone they look up to. Because a lot of, you know, kids like Kerry and Curtin, I went to school with, you know, people like that. And it's all they want really is to be treated like an adult and given a bit of responsibility. And when they do, they flourish. And it's like, we saw so much of that in our hometown. But once you're a naughty kid, you're just treated like a naughty kid. So you don't really get those opportunities, or you just, you know, you get off to life in such a bad sort of way. That sort of finding that depth to the show was massive. And again, that's my favorite, you know, more my favorite comedies have that.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, that line between tragedy and comedy is so sort of blurred, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Completely. But then, I mean, speaking of, again, getting the opportunity to do something and to grow, the kind of the growth of this country, it was quite slow and steady as such. It wasn't one that was just huge overnight, but then it did go on to just get bigger and bigger and become adored. But what I want to know is, how quickly did the excitement of finally getting to make your show, making it how you want. How quickly did that have to start to battle with the annoyance of everyone comparing you to Mackenzie Crook?
God, that was, I think a couple of people have come up to me and said, oh, I love you in Pirates of the Caribbean. I just didn't have the heart to say, no, it's not me.
Thanks, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny Depp's great. Yeah, again, it's like comedy, it's like music. Everyone, for people to be able to grasp something, they have to have something else in their mind that they can compare you to. And that's fine, you know, it is what it is.
It's a prime example on See How They Run. Now that reviews are coming about, I'm seeing a lot of people referring to it as a British Knives Out. And again, I think it's quite tonally different from Knives Out, but it's a murder mystery. It's got a stacked cast.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's a shame that we have to always be so reductive as humans that we need to have something, oh, it's like that. You know, but it makes sense as well. It's a reference point, isn't it?
Definitely. I think that's the thing when this country first came out, and it's just, you know, the fact that, you know, and the Gareth Keenan thing, and it's understandable. I mean, Curtin, there's a lot of similarities in those characters. And again, The Office was a show that we were so inspired by. But I think if you watch it enough, you realize there's differences as well. And but like I said, that's just comedy, you know. You take bits from other shows. We've taken bits from loads of different shows, you know, even Stolen Lines, because it's like we sort of became like magpies collecting these different things, and you make it your own, don't you? It evolves, and, you know, The Office would have been influenced by something else, you know, Spinal Tap, and that was influenced by something. Do you know what I mean? It's like this chain of inspirations, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, anyone who actually ended up watching the first series, it sort of died down, all those comparisons, which was nice.
Yeah.
And then it really became its own thing. But again, like I said, and the mockumentary thing is, people immediately say, oh, just compare it to other shows in the past. But but they're all so different.
Yeah, completely. Again, on paper, a mockumentary about a very specific kind of working class area, this country and people just do nothing are exactly the same. They couldn't be more different. Could be more different shows. I love them both. But again, they're not. Yeah. You're not getting the same thing there. But yeah, there's always going to be those through lines, I guess. You spoke about how early days, having a writing partner who's your sibling is ideal, because you're kind of just, you're trying to make Daisy laugh, Daisy's trying to make you laugh. How did that develop as the series went on? Because again, it is all, I guarantee that first season would have been such an amazing learning curve for you. You talked about learning as an actor on See How They Run with working with these people. So I guess, how did the writing develop, and did you kind of start to lose that imposter syndrome a bit and start to go, oh, I kind of know how to write a series a bit now, and we've got these structures and these beats and all that?
You do find a bit of a formula in the end. I think, well, that first series was sort of 15 years in the making. That was our whole lives up until that first series. And then suddenly the second series gets commissioned, and then you've got, you know, 6 months to write it, or 4 months. And then even less with the third series. So it's funny. It's like, you have all the time in the world to make that first thing. But as soon as that's made, it's the next series. And you do find a groove, and you find, I mean, what was so nice, and what's so great about social media, with all its downside, is that you can get that instant feedback. You can type in the hashtag this country and find out whatever anyone has ever written about the show. I mean, sometimes it's about Boris Johnson or something else, but which, you know, can be a mistake, because then you find out someone says, you know, that guy from this country has got the biggest nose I've ever seen, or something like that. It's quite upsetting. But when it's positive, it's so nice, and you see what works and what people like. And then that does inform what you do in the second series. You know, I think, especially for the third series, actually, where we focus more on the vicar. And I think that was just a case of loads of people sort of saying, oh, you know, asking questions, because they're like, oh, is the vicar married? Does he have kids? Or does he? And it was like, these are questions we should be asking ourselves. And that was really nice, exploring those backstories, because it felt like the first series was sort of like a curtain, sort of following him more, and in the second series it was Kerry and her dad, and then the third series we really got to focus on the vicar, and it just felt really nice exploring that, you know, his sort of his days when he was in a Christian pop group and stuff.
But that was also beautifully played because as well, we're two seasons in and a long time in for the characters, and you realise that Kerry and Curtin don't know anything about the vicar. It's kind of they're going along with the with the audience of going, what, you've got a kid and you're in a band and all this kind of thing. It's beautiful.
So selfish. Yeah. And that was, and then even because we always had, which was brilliant, we always had pretty much a week before each series to have rehearsals. There was always money in the budget for that. And we would always do the rehearsals in Northleach, the village where we filmed.
Yeah.
So we'd just hire out the village hall. I mean, it didn't cost much. It was like 50 quid. And we'd get all the cast down for a few days or a week. And we'd just do a lot of like improv, do the scenes. We'd walk around the village to the different locations. Because the great thing about it is, you know, Kerry's house is 200 yards from the village hall, and the vicar's office is not far. It's all, you know, on location, basically, where we film. So that was really nice, actually. And it really gave people a chance to, because sometimes when you come into a job, an acting job, you don't have that opportunity to meet any of the cast in a show or a film. You just come in for a couple of days, do your scenes, and you go again. And that just doesn't feel, it just feels so wrong. So in that sense, having all these characters in one room, even if they're not going to be in scenes together, was just a real way of making it feel like a family, making it feel collaborative. And, you know, we'd do a lot of improv, and it was a chance for them to really bring themselves into that character. Because I think the great thing about this country is that none of us are far from the characters we play. Like me and Daisy really are Kerry and Curtin. They are just slightly heightened versions of ourselves. Paul Jahidi plays the vicar is just as nice, just as sweet as him, if not nicer. Ashley Maguire, who plays Mandy, is just as terrifying, but also, you know, there's a real sweet edge to her. So that was really nice, basically, and having that opportunity. And we'd have not really an acting coach, but like more of an improv coach to come down and sort of organise that. And that felt really special to have that time to do it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And because, again, it's fun. You're finding it out for yourselves and stuff like that.
It's such a rare treat to be able to have time and budget for stuff like that. But I think it's all so important. You always hear of your Tarantinos or your Ridley Scotts and all these who do things completely different to the way everyone else does it. And everyone gives the excuse of, oh, but that's because it's Ridley or because it's Tarantino. Yeah. It's like, well, it might be the other way around. It might be that they're that good because they are so insistent on these specific things outside of the usual, well, you'll turn up at this time, you'll do your scenes and then you're gone kind of thing. It's not...
And that, being an actor, that's the funnest part, isn't it? It's playing around with it, having that freedom to sort of try things. And we'd always have we had a little camera rolling so we could watch stuff back and be like, we discovered so much of a show during those rehearsals. I mean, some great lines came from it, but also like structurally, like storylines and like stuff that felt good in the room. We're like, oh, that there's something there. Let's pursue that. And that was just really, really useful. And also, like you said, with the thing about going over the series, the things you learn, you know, we always made sure there was money in the budget to, after filming, once it had all been edited together, we had a couple of days where we were able to do like pickup days. So if there was stuff that we hadn't felt that we missed or we needed a talking head to knit two scenes together, we always had that opportunity. And that was so, so important, because if we didn't have that, it would feel a lot more disjointed or sort of patchwork, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's little things like that. And again, being a mockumentary is the easiest way of doing a comedy, because you can
particularly on the patching up moments,
because of the
talking heads element that you can go, here we go.
Yeah, because you get all the exposition out straight away. You basically got Curtin at the start of the episode saying, basically, today I'm going to go, you know, to the zoo or whatever. So you just got you don't have to work those into scenes, which can take half a page. And there's always there was just more freedom and time to have pure the funny stuff and the character stuff. But yeah, I mean, and again, that's what we're discovering now with writing, is writing shows that aren't mockumentaries is so difficult. It's such a different beast. And yeah, it will always be the easiest vehicle for comedy, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things there, and I jump all over the place, so apologies. But
No worries.
What you were saying about those days of having everyone there together, it also gets you past the moments that you touched upon earlier of you've got Adrian Brody staring you in the face and you're doing this scene.
Yeah.
That could be really hard if the cameras are rolling and you're trying to remain in character. It's weird because, again, it's not a simple thing. It is most people I know who've got into this industry are there because they're fans of film and TV and all these things. So
definitely,
it's one thing to have learnt your character and learnt your lines, but then if the first time you're eye to eye with Adrian Brody is in a scene and you're having to not fanboy out or be in your own head, as you said, of thinking, oh man, this is
exactly
happening, this is here, you know, it's a weird one to balance, right?
So hard. And I mean I don't have that switch in me where I could suddenly become a character. I think it takes me a while to get into a character.
Yeah.
So having that opportunity to sort of meet him and do it a few times and just play around with the characters was so useful. I mean, I guess the best actors are able just to switch it on because that's what it is. But not everyone works like that.
I'm always telling myself, we can't only have the best actors. They're going to need the rest of us. So if the best actors can just switch it on, they can't play all the roles. I'm not going to be... I'm not going to be Adrian Brody, but I'm about, you know, I can help out. I can pull my weight.
Exactly. You've got to have a balance there.
Exactly.
Oh my God. I mean, even in this country, we used to do things like, I mean, there was a scene in it where Martin, who's Carrie's dad, is talking about, I think he's in the pub scene and he's talking to Curtin. I think this is in the second series about getting... bit crass, but he's getting tugged off by his mother-in-law. But it's basically, it was like a monologue that we'd written for my dad and to do, which again is a bit weird that we wrote that material for him, but anyway. But when it came to rehearsals, we just basically went to the local pub and just got him to, you know, sit by the bar and just tell that story and sort of improvise it and stuff. So being able to have an opportunity to even be in the location where you're going to film, and especially for someone like him who's not a real actor, he's never trained, but he's really sort of naturally so good, so talented. I think it really helped him being able to sort of put him at ease for when he did it for real and to be in that environment. And because it's like, you know, acting, it's just so much of it is just like trying to link it back to real experiences, isn't it? Well, it is for me anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. I mean, I guess that's the whole method thing and it can sound a little bit up his own ass or whatever. But if it helps get a more truthful performance, then why not? I think all these little things help so much. But yeah.
I completely agree. But so you've said numerous times, writing a mockumentary, easiest way to write because you've got that freedom of playing things about. How was it to then write for an episode of Avenue 5? Because, again, this intricate show, it's Armando Iannucci. That's literally writing royalty there. So that's a big thing to go from here's our little world to working on an episode of that. How was that for both of you, for you and Daisy?
That was such a huge learning experience for us. I mean, when we got asked to do it, it was just like, wow. I mean, massively daunting, but just too good to say no. Yeah. So, and the way he works is, you know, it's like a writer's room. So you've got, you know, you're in a room with loads of different writers, like amazing writers that have written, you know, some of your favorite shows down the years. And it's just literally just throwing ideas out there and just being a part of that. I mean, I think for the first, you know, few sessions we did, I don't think me and Daisy said anything. We were just sat there just like it, totally in awe.
I was going to say, how keen were you to get that first good idea out there? Because it's going to be intimidating, isn't it? To be like,
oh my God, totally. Yeah, having that confidence just to speak up, because it's comedy is such a personal thing, isn't it? It's like bearing your soul. And that thing, you know, if you say something that falls a bit flat, it can be soul destroying. So,
And again, previously, so much of the comedy has been making your family laugh.
Exactly.
You know, your sister, your dad, all of these kind of things. And this is... we're not at home.
So it was a completely different way of working. And I think we were sort of writing episode 4 or episode 5. So it was like trying to write an episode that fits within this collection of episodes that other people have done. And because writing, you know, these characters aren't characters you've written. So they're not characters that have got your voice. So you have to try and really quickly tap into that. And that's really, really tricky, especially for me and Daisy. And we did find it tough. We did find it tough because I'm not sure that's our strong point. We, you know, coming onto a show and, you know, carrying on other people's ideas, that takes a specific type of talent. And I'm not sure we quite have that. But it was an amazing experience. And to work with Amanda, again, you know, talking about the Reese Shearsmith thing, it was seeing how he came up with ideas was so unbelievable, because he would just suddenly go really quiet and just like really sort of in like withdrawn and sort of, you think, God, is he all right? It's, oh no, he's just thinking of an idea. So it can like feel a little bit awkward at times, like there's that silence, but suddenly he'll just come up with like a brilliant idea or a funny line. So seeing that firsthand was incredible because, again, he's someone who's done, you know, shows that I just absolutely adore.
I love the idea of you and Daisy being in a room with Armando and all these people have written the thick of it and all these things. And you go quiet and into yourself like Reese. Yeah. And then you pipe up with maybe he could be wanked off by his mother-in-law.
There was a few of those. I mean, that's me and Daisy. Our sort of go-to laughs are always the one that is just the most crass or like rude that you just know that will never stay in, but you just makes you laugh in the room.
Let's put it out there.
Toilet humour. I think a lot of, I mean, we did end up having to get a lot of help with that episode, I think. A lot of the stuff we had written ended up didn't staying in. But there was definitely a wanking gag that got taken out, which is a shame. But it is what it is.
It is what it is. It is.
Yeah, well, you've got to try these things.
Or it's that, or not specifically only that, but the comfort in going to those areas that make you, or Kerry and Curtin as characters stand out so well. And I've spoken to numerous people who saw early iterations of Kerry and Curtin who were just like, I remember speaking to Susan Wacoma about you guys and Jamie Dimitriou, who's someone I wanted to bring up now because I need to talk about Stafflet's Flats because it was already an amazing TV show and then you come on and are part of one of the greatest fight scenes in TV history. So how was that to come in on? Again, it's one of those things where it's already... You know, you guys had built a family on this country. It's already a family and a group there. Again, it's a brother and sister, so it is literally a family.
Exactly.
So, like, how was that to jump in on?
Well, I mean, as a fan, being able to do it was like feeling like you'd won a competition or something like that. It was just such a amazing experience. And because they are such a fucking lovely, talented group of people.
Yeah,
you know, and like again, seeing how Jamie works and he's like physical comedy with that when he was falling around the room, and that was sort of like, I mean, we only did, I think that was about a couple of takes, I think, but he just literally from the first take just completely nailed it, and because it's such a specific thing doing that physical comedy, isn't it? It's like you know, it can look sort of off the cuff, and but actually, you need a lot of rehearsal and a lot of like thought to make it look naturalistic and authentic. But I think he's just got that natural, those funny bones where he just walks into the room and you can't help but chuckle, but in the best possible way. He's just, oh man, I just look up to him so much.
Those kinds of real world fights just aren't documented enough. I always remember at college, these two lads, I was a little metaler and a punk kid, and there were two of the goth lads had got in an argument, and they both just grabbed each other's throats and wouldn't let go, and that was all the fight was, just waiting for one of them to let go. No one threw a punch. Just both angrily looking at each other, holding each other's throats, like, this is the most intense fight I've ever seen in my life.
That
instantly came to mind as I watched you two flail about and not make any contact.
I mean, I'm sure if you pause it, you'll see me laughing throughout the whole thing, which I came away thinking, fuck, I think I've just ruined that whole scene because I just couldn't stop laughing, especially the kicking where it was like doing like the Highlands sort of swing. And again, it was just like playing around with a mate. It just doesn't quite feel like work. It was just like, here's the set, go off and do it. But weirdly, we've known sort of Tash and Jamie for years. We did like a panel show with a production company and it never got commissioned, but we did like a in the room sort of pilot type thing. And that was years ago. And this was like years before this country was ever on TV. And it was weird because they're obviously brother and sister and me and Daisy. So it was sort of like instantly clicked, but it was weird. It was like so many, Guz Khan was on it as well. Gemma Whelan was on it. Like loads of other people. Sorry, being a bit nostalgic.
It sounds like
now.
A hell of a show. I mean, that must have been really shit because all the talent in there is amazing. So it must have been a really appalling show to not have worked with guys on it.
But we sort of played, I played a really early version of Curtin actually, as like this, it was like a topical panel show, but played by like character comedians. And I played this sort of Curtin type who like sits in the audience and just sort of heckles. But oh my God, I would love, I mean, if it was ever filmed, I'd love to watch it back because it just would have been so bad. But that, I mean, you could see that everyone there had something about them, which is why they were in the room. But it's funny how it takes that time to evolve and find your thing, and you have to do those things that aren't so good and that fail and make mistakes, and all of it is so much part of it. You have to do it.
It's mad. That character comedian type thing is mad to me because it's such a nuanced thing. As you were saying, it's so, Curtin is close to you, but it's not you. But it's not this great departure. And Guz Khan, I did a film with Guz a few years back, and it was so bizarre because he was almost exactly the same offset as on set. But on set, I had to, like, there were certain points I had to go and do something because I was going to ruin the scene because I was laughing. Because exactly that, I'm like, what is this small nuance that makes me unable to hold it together? Because he just does this slight tweak in who he is that just...
Yeah.
And you guys do it, and Jamie and Tash do it, obviously, and it's,
And yeah, again, it's having the bravery to do those things, those little nuances and really specific details, because sometimes, you fall into a trap of thinking, oh, no one's going to get this, so I'm going to have to play this character a bit straighter or, like, a bit bigger just to get a laugh, but you don't have to do that. I think having faith in the specificity of your character is so important because that's what makes them original and what makes them unique, I suppose.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, you touched upon the working with Jamie and kind of seeing his process. Was that interesting as a writer again as well? Because Stafflet's Flats is always one that I look at and think, how can any of this work on the page? Like you've got to have such faith in, because there's so much of it that it's the way he delivers it or the way he moves or the way he looks he's doing it. But it must be so hard to kind of get that round you until you're there on the day and just...
Definitely. Yeah. I think a lot, I mean, I think he was... Unfortunately, I didn't get to spend a lot of time with him because he was just writing in between scenes. I think he was so behind, but rewriting stuff, but... He was just churning this stuff out. And it was just like, I think he wrote a scene for me that wasn't originally in the script. And he wrote it in about half an hour. He's like, oh yeah, do you fancy doing this morning? And it was just like the best, you know, some killer lines. I was like, oh, that's just the fact he can do that. I mean, because I know how the process of writing can be so hard. And when you're under pressure, when you're having to do stuff on set, that is really, really difficult. And the fact that he's a lead character and he's in most scenes. So I think, you know, at least I've got Daisy to sort of shoulder the burden with. But, you know, it was all on him, really. I mean, I know he's got some, you know, a great cast around him that all chip in with brilliant lines and material. But I think... But like, yeah, I mean, he's been doing that character for years, hasn't he? It's sort of a similar thing to me and Daisy, that it was this sort of years in the making. And it was a sort of character that had been rattling around in the back of his head for a while. But it's just it's so beautifully done. And I can't have enough positive words for it, to be fair. And that's why I was so panicked about doing it, because I was like, I can't ruin a show that I love. Because I'll never forgive myself. I just have to sort of jump off a cliff or something.
I love it. Well, I mean, we're getting up to the hour mark now, so I'll start to wrap things up. I just want to kind of ask what's ahead. You've touched upon writing and waiting for the right thing, but what do you kind of look at and go, I'd love to be involved in that, or I want to be, you know, in that kind of world? Is there anything that jumps out that you're like, man, that'd be cool?
I mean, going back to that sort of Armando thing and that doing something like a writer's room on I've sort of criminally, I've only just got into Succession after all these years, but it's
good,
just so good. And the fact that, you know, it's that the drama to it and the fact there's, you know, 10 episodes in a series and they're an hour long. I mean, it's a massive project and that's something that you can't do as one or two writers, but I would love to be on a project where, like a writer's room thing, where you can get different guest writers on to do an episode. That would be really... Because that's a lot of fun, being in those rooms and brushing out ideas. And that's when it's really creative. But yeah, having a big project like that would be ideal.
It's mad what can be inspirational as well. I was talking to Tom George about this. Because when I saw his cast for See How They Run, it was like, man, this is fucking amazing. And again, as a huge fan of this country, it's like... How is this your first kind of feature film? Look at this cast, look at everything. It's all achievable, right? It's all there.
I mean, that's the thing. Like now, Yeah, exactly. It's not like a million miles away. It can be done. It's just it's finding an idea that's got legs, and that, you know, you can end up making 4 or 5 series with 10 episodes each series. That's like, and that's why Succession is just how the way it keeps developing and unravels, and a new character comes in, and it's just so that's the stuff I love to watch, and I cannot believe I'm sort of happy at the same time that I've still got like a few series left to watch, which is just brilliant. But in terms of the future, yeah, I mean, I do love writing, and that's the thing, you never come to a point where you say, I'm an accomplished writer now. I've conquered it. You're just always learning. You're always getting better. 100%. And there's different stuff. You know, I'd love to write a more of a dramatic comedy thing. And I'd love to do historical stuff like period comedies, because it's sort of, it's a classic thing of people say, oh, that's been done with Blackadder. But, you know, there's so many sort of ideas out there that can, you know, you can discover in periods 100%. Of time. And I just, and I, you know, a, because the thing of modern stuff is the storyline can just be sort of, you know, if someone picks up the phone, that can completely knacker your, do you know what I mean? Like, you haven't got those, I don't know quite what I'm trying to say, but
no,
I guess it's like...
completely understand. There's so many bits of kind of peril even that you can't add when you add mobile phones or whatever else. It's kind
completely, of... Completely, yeah, because, you know, it's so easy to just pick up a phone and call someone, and then that would resolve a whole storyline. But if it's something historical where you didn't have that, you know, it's a different set of pressures, different set of circumstances, and that's... really fascinates me, because it feels like the modern thing, having done this country, really feels like, you know that I've done that. So to do something, you know, historical would be really nice. And that was also, which was so nice about doing See How They Run, was that the fact it was 1950s and you know, the sets and the costumes, you're transported to a completely different world. I really, really love that sort of escapism, and
I love it. Well, I appreciate the time, man. It's been a pleasure. No,
thank
to chat.
You
really enjoyed it, and as I said, I've been purely by chance, because of stumbling upon either the first or second episode and not knowing if it was real or not, I've been a fan from the start. So
love that.
Sealed its head.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank
loved
you.
It.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Charlie Cooper. I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you will also enjoy the bonus episode on Friday with Tom George. Because imagine, from what you've heard there, imagine that dude's journey. Kind of the first thing he really directed was This Country as a series, BAFTA winning, amazing, praised hit show. And then his debut film is this... monster of a murder mystery. So yeah, we're going to talk about that on Friday, so I hope you tune in. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.